Mandy, it's happening.
What's happening?
Disney is releasing Inside Out 2.
I'm so excited.
The sequel to the OG. You know the movie about Riley, our favorite 11-year-old girl who moves with her parents from Minnesota, freezing cold, to San Francisco and freaks out a little?
Yes, I love it.
Yes. So they tell the story in her head about the five personified emotions: joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust, and how she manages her emotional responses from mission control headquarters in her brain.
I love the movie. So do my kids. And fun fact for you, it is what we are dressing up for Halloween this year. We are super excited for Inside Out 2.
Forward to that. So anyway, Inside Out 2, right? Riley's now a teenager, and they added a few new emotions, mainly anxiety, envy, ennui, the French word for boredom, and embarrassment. And she's got to work herself through all this new stuff that comes with these more complex emotions because she's a teenager.
I think it's super healthy that we talk about all of these different emotions, especially in our teenage years. And I love the way, though, that Disney pretends it's a kids movie, but really it's more for adults because, am I right?
Totally.
Like, I love me a good movie and all. But what does this even have to do with being cultured and curious, Pete?
Nothing.
Okay.
I just like going to the movies and eating popcorn and drinking Diet Coke. If you're putting a gun to my head, I would say it's got everything to do with being cultured and curious. It's psychology, man.
Oh, good spin.
And in my book, psychology is fascinating. It is the ultimate way to gain insight into human behavior across our planet. It helps us appreciate the diversity of the human experience. And if we can do that, then we're going to be more empathetic and better handle and navigate all the social interactions we have to manage all day long. And probably most important, it encourages critical thinking and self-awareness, and it gets us out of our own head, and it helps us reflect on our own biases and hopefully be more open-minded. So,
I mean, isn't that all about what it means to be cultured and curious?
I think it is. Okay. Yeah. So, different topic, but totally related. Did you hear that AI is starting to offer mental health support? Just you and a chatbot, man, available 24/7 on your smartphone.
One, did not know about this, but two, I also don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah. Okay. So, I don't know how to feel about it either, but listen. We all know there's a critical shortage in therapists out there and a growing number of patients. Like, duh. But AI supposed to fill the gap? Really?
No.
This AI psychology is totally next level. Say hello to the Wobot. That's the name.
Stop it.
Yep.
Like robot, but a woe.
Wobot. New app that is kind of like a pocket therapist that uses the text function to help manage problems like depression, anxiety, and loneliness. Wobot is trained on large amounts of specialized data to help recognize words, phrases, and even freaking emojis associated with dysfunctional thought, and then synthesize the user's inputs and mimic a type of in-person talk therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT.
You're just talking crazy shit.
No. Look, on the one hand, I get it, dude. We like at some point have to modernize psychology. It's actually hard to find therapy. Like, I personally have looked for a bunch of therapists since Gabby passed. Like, it's hard. And then you put a lot of time into finding someone. It doesn't work out. It's a pain in the ass. But also, realistically, it's not like therapists are always on call and available when you need them. Like in my case, a lot of times, like 2 a.m., I can't sleep. I'm about to have the panic attack. I'm thinking about Gabby. It's freaking me out. And so I feel like we're leaving a little bit of clinical value on the table because I can't call someone at that time. I mean, I can call a friend. I get it. But like a therapist ain't answering at that time. Do I really want to like text a friggin' chatbot? Like, is that going to help me?
I don't know. That's just weird. I think it's weird.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Sorta Sophisticated, a podcast rooted in becoming more cultured and curious, where we endeavor to suspend judgment, expand our worldview, and learn to appreciate varying perspectives and values.
But really, it's a show where we hope to enlighten anyone who cares on topics that might make them more interesting and well-versed humans, and just dangerous enough to hold their own in this sophisticated world. Sort of.
And today we will be taking a beginner's crash course in the world of psychology.
Kill me now.
Right. Okay. So, funny story about psychology experiments, because we're going to talk a little bit about them.
A funny story.
Yeah. Well, maybe if, I don't know if it's a funny story. Me and my wife shared a toothpaste tube for like a lot of years, right? Like,
are you a bottom squeezer?
Yeah, so we would. So this was the game.
Because this is my philosophy on life.
Not how I squeeze. This was literally the game. Who could get the last bit of toothpaste out of the toothpaste? Like, it got so weird at one point. Like, I remember when we would do this all the time. It was classic.
Okay, what would you do?
I would, at the end, when like you couldn't get anything else out, I would cut the toothpaste tube in half and I would extract whatever I could get out of it and then lay the two pieces on the counter with a little sticky note that said, I won. And whoever threw...
You have problems.
No, whoever threw away the toothpaste tube had to go buy more toothpaste. And it was like, it was this, it was like our super cute little way of just loving on each other. And I think it was a classic psychological experiment. And that's my story.
Very intriguing.
So there you go. Okay. And our word of the day is concatenate. Our challenge is to work this word into the podcast somewhere and make it seem like we meant to.
And the definition of concatenate is?
Hold on. Let me channel my inner Will Ferrell from old school. No? Okay. Here we go. Nucleotide alignments were created by the concatenation of the individual gene alignments. Whoa. I just blacked out. What happened?
I mean, you said something extremely smart and no one understood. So I don't know if I'm able to work that in. But I guess I'll
I need
try.
A glass of water, people. I don't even know what just happened. Concatenate, like to bring things together.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Easy enough.
All right. So today we'll be diving into the fascinating world of psychology to unravel the mysteries of the human mind. We're going to explore how psychology shapes our daily lives, influences our decisions, and enriches our understanding of ourselves and others. From a little science behind our emotions to the intricacies of cognitive development and behavior, we'll uncover the profound impact that psychological principles have on everyday life. Whether you're a seasoned psychologist...
I feel like you need to stop listening now if you're a seasoned psychologist.
Damn!
I'm sorry. I just, you already wanted to replace them with AI bots.
Wow. Or just curious about what makes us tick. This episode promises to entertain and inspire you to see the world through a new lens.
Wait, how do we even begin to learn about psychology? Like, we had to take a whole class and then classes and A, B, and C. And
no.
Like, do I need to look inside my mind's eye?
No.
Or?
Just relax.
Just kill me now. I'm not ready.
Oh, my God. Okay, listen. To appreciate psychology, we got to first do a quick inventory on what's going on upstairs. Like, in the old noggin, the noodle, the bean.
The what?
The brain, dude. You know, the 8-pound organ that sits on top of your neck there. That
Wait,
basically
is your brain 8 pounds, but in your head is 10 pounds, so your skull's only 2 pounds?
Yes.
Oh.
What is it with you and math?
That's, I'm sorry, that was just...
Yes. So the brain, right?
The brain.
So here are the basics. So I'll buzz through this. So neurons. The brain is made up of approximately 85 billion neurons, which are the basic building blocks of the nervous system. Neurons communicate with each other through electrical and chemical signals, people. I think we all know that.
Just like the plants in the Amazon.
Oh my God. All right. Then you got the synapses. Neurons are connected by synapses. Think of them like traffic intersections where they exchange info, where the exchange of info occurs via neurotransmitters. This communication is super key for all brain functions, unless you're a vegetable, in which case then there ain't no exchange going on upstairs, if you know what I mean.
You said that too lightheartedly for the fact that people are vegetables.
Well, the vegetables won't know it. Okay, so some key neurotransmitters include, I think you know some of these, dopamine. That's our high five guy or the pat on the back guy. Yay, dopamine. Then you got serotonin, the Zen master. He's the one who's telling you, like, take a deep breath, like, relax, everybody. Then you have acetylcholine, your personal trainer and multitasking assistant, like, rolled into one. He's the guy with the clipboard yelling, like, all right, muscles, let's hustle. Like, oh, that guy, right?
I don't think I have a lot of that one.
You don't have.
I don't got a personal trainer in my brain, no.
Okay. Then you have glutamate, the life of the party, the super energetic guest who's always hyping up everybody, getting things moving along. Yeah, yeah, glutamate.
So that's, you have a lot of that.
Yeah, I've got a lot of glutamate. And then you have GABA, the old the bouncer at the super exclusive club with the dark sunglasses and the sleek black suit, ensuring things don't get too rowdy inside. Whenever the party gets out of hand, GABA steps in with a calm, deep voice and says, all right, folks, let's bring it down a notch here, people.
The responsible one.
Yeah, totally. Okay. And then from there, you got like the major brain regions. You got the brain stem. He's the guy who controls basic life functions such as breathing, heart rate, and pooping. You know, sort of important stuff to stay alive.
And the stuff that we don't really think about.
That's the brain stem. Okay, then you got the cerebellum. He handles movements, balance, and posture, right?
So you don't have a cerebellum.
Wow.
I'm just saying your balance is...
I'm okay. I'm not getting that old. Okay. That's ageist. Bring it down a notch. All right, then you have the limbic system. He's the guy who handles the emotions and memory. And finally, the cerebral cortex, the guy responsible for all the complex shit that goes on in your brain, like thought, decision making. It's got four lobes and it handles all of our heavy lifting.
Okay, well, how does this all work together? Because I feel like a lot of this is just like, it just happens.
Yeah. So here's how it works. So like you wake up in the morning, shout out to the brainstem, thank you for waking me up, and immediately start interacting with your environment. And if you're anything like me, it just gets worse from there. Okay, just kidding. So we just walk around all day and we process our environment through our senses, learn new shit, stress out about the shit we just learned, adapt to the shit that we just stressed out about, drink heavily, binge watch some TV, tell ourselves we'll be better tomorrow, and then hit the hay. Rinse, repeat.
Got it. I will say, Pixar did a really great job illustrating what you just laid down there.
They did. This is why we're going to go watch Inside Out 2 and have some popcorn and Diet Coke.
Perfect.
All right. So basically all these brain regions work together all day long, shooting neurotransmitter juice all over the place, helping us figure out which one we like best and how to repeat that behavior to get the reward again. But it's mostly just a fight club between the limbic system and the cerebral cortex, seeing who wins the match for the day, while the other two are just sort of running in the background, making sure you don't die. And if that shit's not balanced all that well, and one guy is winning like way too much of the time, then you got yourself a psych disorder and it's time for some AI therapy, baby. So you got the brain?
I'm not on board with the AI therapy yet, but I guess that is one way to look at it. Your brain is a strange place, but I do appreciate the way in which you explained that so succinctly.
Thank you very much.
So you want to give me a history lesson here? Because I feel like that's coming on. When do we start to figure out all this stuff?
All right. Are you ready for this? Strap in.
I don't know if I'm ready. Is this going to be a quick history lesson?
I'm going to go quick.
Okay.
So once upon a time, in the land of ancient Greece, there lived a bunch of, let's call them, thinkers, who would sit and smoke dope and ponder life's big questions. I don't really know if they had dope back then, but you get the idea. These guys like Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, were the OGs of psychology, dabbling in the mysteries of the mind while wearing togas and sandals and shit. Fun fact, Aristotle's work, De Anima, which translates to On the Soul, is one of the earliest texts addressing psychological concepts that we know exists. Like the Dead Sea Scrolls for like Jesus. Like same concept. All right.
Okay.
So fast forward a few centuries to the Renaissance, where everyone was too busy painting and inventing cool stuff to care much about psychology at all. But then along comes this guy named René Descartes, who, if you don't know, is famous for having said, "I think, therefore I am."
I mean, come on. Who doesn't know that?
Right. So
granted, I didn't know who it was from.
Cue the light bulb, people. Fair. Bing! So René was the first to propose dualism, the idea that the mind and body are separate entities. So then a bunch of people start thinking, hey, since we're tired of orgies, maybe our minds are worth exploring too, right?
Okay.
So, I know, right?
Did they actually think that?
I don't know. I'm stretching a little bit, but you get the idea. Okay, it's me, baby. Okay, so then on to the Enlightenment. Late 17th, early 18th century, John Locke comes along and blows everyone's mind with the idea that knowledge comes from experience and observation, laying the groundwork for modern-day scientific psychology.
Huh.
I know. Jump ahead. 19th century. Am I going fast enough for you here?
Yeah, I like it.
Jump ahead to the 19th century with everybody rocking top hats, handlebar mustache and shit, and psychology started getting pretty, pretty serious. Wilhelm Wundt, spoiler alert, the father of modern psychology, opens the first ever psychology lab in Germany in 1879, and suddenly everyone wants to be a mind scientist, people. He promotes introspection as the method to study conscious experience.
What is introspection?
Introspection. Introspection is like holding a one-person press conference in your brain where you ask yourself all the tough questions and then awkwardly dodge them because you realize you're both the journalist asking the question and the athlete trying to answer the question. Anyway.
So you're just talking to yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, his claim to fame, so to speak, was separating philosophy and physiology from psychology, making it its own unique field. Shout out to Wilhelm Wundt. And meanwhile, at the same time here in America, William James founds functionalism, basically focusing on how mental processes help individuals adapt to their environment. He authored the Principles of Psychology, the seminal text for psychology. These two dudes were the OG of the modern day guys.
But who technically is then the founder of psychology?
That's going to be, you're going to call him Wilhelm Wundt. He was the father of modern psychology.
And yes. He's the one who told us that we need to introspect ourselves.
He's an introspector. But William James, you can't deny William James.
Yes.
He was a badass in America. Because the principles of psychology is what everybody uses. Like, okay, literally everybody.
So together
uses.
They started
yes,
it all.
Yeah, together. Okay. Then comes Sigmund Freud, right?
Siggy. Good old Siggy?
Yeah, good old Siggy. The dude with the cigar on the couch? You know Siggy. Yeah. He's all about dreams, unconscious desires, and blaming everything on your mom and erections. Thanks, Freud. But he really played up the role of the unconscious mind and introduced the id, ego, and superego.
Wait, what? Id? Ego?
Yeah.
Superego?
Yeah. No? Okay.
You want to extend
it
a little bit?
I don't know how I'm going to do this easily. Okay, the id, your inner toddler. The ego, maybe the middle manager. And the superego was your super strict grandma. Does that work?
Okay, sure. We're going to roll with this. Okay. We're going to see where this goes.
Yeah, okay. And while all this is going on, Ivan Pavlov is over in the corner somewhere in freaking Russia ringing bells and making dogs drool, proving that behavior could be conditioned. So there's a lot of crap going on around that time.
Like all of these people are going on at the same time.
Yeah, well, Siggy and Pavlov, yes.
Yes. One, oh, okay.
Yeah. One was like, where was he? In Austria, and the other one's in Russia. Right. So anyway, fast forward to the 20th century, and psychology explodes, man. So we got Johnny Watson arguing psychology should study only observable behavior and not mental processes, and became famous for his Little Albert experiment.
I'm sorry, Little who?
Little Albert, is this, Little Albie.
Is this like the Albert piercing?
No, this is like
no
Little
relation?
Albert. Not oh, to be okay. confused with Fat Albert or the Albert piercing or whatever you're talking about. That's a whole different
a
Albert.
Prince Albert?
No, Little Albert was the baby that ended up being scared shitless of a white rat because every time he would show it to him, they would smack a lead pipe with a hammer. It's all about classical conditioning to get an emotional response.
What the hell?
Yeah, this is what they did.
Okay.
They'd show him a white rat. So this is how it started. They showed him a white rat. He thought it was cute. He would pet the white rat. But after a while, what they did was they took a lead pipe and a hammer, and every time they brought the white rat out, he would literally make a fucking smashing noise with the hammer on the lead pipe, and it scared the shit out of the kid. The kid was like 9 months old, Little Albert. And so the kid obviously started getting scared of the rat, so much so that as soon as the rat came out, before they even made the noise, he was freaking out. Classic conditioning. Yes. Okay.
I feel like they need to put lots of money in his therapy
jar. Yeah. No, it's insane the way we used to test on people. Okay. Anyway, then around the same time, you got B.F. Skinner, famous for his Skinner box, where rats learn to push levers for snacks. Well, smart rats anyway. The dumb ones just died of starvation, I guess. So he's basically trying to figure out how consequences shape behavior through reward or punishment. And I think it worked.
I mean, clearly.
Yeah. And Carl Rogers was busy being all empathetic and touchy-feely, while Abraham Maslow makes a pyramid of needs. Go figure. Self-actualization is at the top. And that's a run-through of all the important guys, I guess. I'm sure there's a few more, but you get the idea. So anyway.
I mean, that's a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So today, psychology is everywhere. From therapy couches to freaking corporate boardrooms. We come a long way from those toga-wearing philosophers to brain-scanning machines and AI therapists.
Not on board with AI therapists yet.
Who knows what the future holds, Mandy? Maybe one day I'll finally figure out why I dream about showing up to work naked all the time.
I'm pretty sure we could Google that, but all right.
Sure. I did, and I didn't find anything. I think I have
really?
A problem.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe you should ask your AI therapist. I think your AI therapist
Maybe I'll send her an emoji.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and give me a list of all the different psychologists so we can run down it and see which one can help you with this little naked time.
Yeah, there's a lot of different fields, right, of psychology. So first we got developmental psychologists who study how we evolve from these adorable babbling little infants to like super complex adults. Spoiler alert, some of us never outgrow the terrible twos. Yours truly included. Then we have the clinical psychologists. They're like the emotional mechanics of the mind. They fix mental health issues with therapy and the occasional, how does that make you feel, Amanda? They're the ones who keep us from totally losing it. Like we're laying on the couch, you know?
They're my favorite.
Okay. Then that's what you need. All right. So then we have the cognitive psychologists study how we think, learn, and remember. They're the folks who understand why you can remember every friggin' word to a song from 1995, but not where you left your car keys in the morning.
Maybe yep. They should be my favorite.
Okay, so you have two favorites. I have a feeling everyone's going to be your favorite. Okay, sorry. Then there's the social psychologist trying to figure out why you do embarrassing things in front of people you want to impress. They help us figure out why we feel the need to post every meal on Instagram and how peer pressure like makes us do all that dumb shit. All right, next you have the behavioral psychologist. They're the creepy voyeurs, man. Like, they watch people and animals like they're in a reality TV show, figuring out why we do what we do. And finally, there's the industrial organizational psychologist.
Pause. Can we go back to the reality TV show?
Uh-huh.
Do you think like a psychologist created reality TV?
Do I think a bunch of them were sitting in a room and had some ideas? Hell yes.
Okay.
Totally.
I was like, because that would be just the perfect experiment.
Oh, yeah.
Convince people that they're going to be
on TV. Dude, and... they're behind all this shit. Oh, totally
okay.
are. Yes.
Okay, sorry. I digress. Okay.
And finally, there's the industrial organizational psychologists. Boring. They help make your workplace slightly less miserable. They try to boost productivity and morale and just try to keep everyone from not quitting in mass after the holiday party.
I mean, I feel like every workplace should have one.
I know. We used to. We don't anymore. Anyway, there's probably a few more, but...
Did everyone quit in mass?
No, nobody quit in mass. But we did have one, yeah. There's some more, but you get the idea.
I think I get the idea. But how do all of these different psychologists tie in with Inside Out?
Oh, they all do in some way, shape, or form. They're all in there somewhere. All right, so remember the OG movie Inside Out released in 2015 by Disney, right?
Yes.
Okay. I got to give a shout out to Pete Docter, the director. He was amazing. So it's about the 11-year-old girl named Riley and how she navigates her major life change. The story set inside of Riley's mind where her five emotions are personified.
Yep, got it.
Okay, God, don't get mad at me. So it's super cute and very well done and earned a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes and won the Academy Award for Best Animated Film.
I mean, that's amazing.
It should have won the Academy Award for Best Film, in my opinion.
True. Just not even animated, just film, period. No. I think I would agree because the idea of learning to put language on emotion is a huge challenge for people.
It is.
And I think Disney and Pixar did an incredible job for both kids and adults in making a film that drops our defenses and really lets us better understand ourselves in a non-threatening way.
Completely and totally. I know people that cried when this movie ended. Literally, that's how good they thought it was.
Tears of joy.
Yes.
Tears of joy.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, if we can slow down and learn to name our feelings like she did in the movie and while they're happening and we can do this, I think we can begin to understand ourselves better and kind of deal with all of our shit.
Welcome to the podcast, people. So then, fast forward 9 years later, and here we are again with Inside Out 2 coming out in theaters, and Riley is back, baby. But this time as a teenager. So Riley's doing just fine and has her five emotions in check, and they're running a pretty successful operation in her head, and then, bam, anxiety shows up. And spoils the part. And anxiety's not alone. She drags along with her some new complex emotions. So basically, you need to watch the movie because the shit hits the fan and she's got more work to do in order to grow and become even more self-aware.
I mean, the expectations are really high for this sequel. So I guess we're going to see where it goes. But now that we know all about what Inside Out 2 and we know just enough about psychology to probably start seeing some patients of our own, I guess the real question is, how does learning about psychology help me in my everyday life?
Seriously? You think you're going to see some patients of your
own? I mean, if AI can do it.
You're ready for that?
Just saying, AI can do it.
All right, let me just start with, how doesn't it help? It helps with everything, especially self-awareness. I promise it's going to all around help your general well-being, improve your relationships, and just overall make you happier. So when I was young, I didn't really get it. I thought it was all tarot cards and gypsy shit, honestly. But now that I've been around a little while, I've started to really appreciate how psychology is helping me better understand myself anyway, has positively impacted me, even in the face of losing my wife. So
You were in that generation of didn't believe in psychologists.
No,
therapy.
I'm not going to lie. I was. Oh, yes. Okay. And now I am a super therapist proponent. So it totally has boosted my productivity and motivation. So a while back, I started setting SMART goals for myself every year.
What are SMART goals?
Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound.
So it's an acronym.
Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. And I track progress. So doing it in this way helps me break up shit that I think is overwhelming into smaller steps. And more recently, I started to focus more on activities that align with my interest and values more instead of just working on work. And
ta-da,
right.
Podcast.
This podcast. thank you very much. Right.
I like how that, okay.
I would have never started doing this without the help of some basic psychology techniques to begin with. So shout out to SMART goals. Seriously. I also, don't laugh at me, totally started using the Pomodoro technique at work to improve my concentration. And I got to say, it totally works.
I'm sorry, Pomodoro?
Pomodoro, yes.
It's not like a pompadour?
It's whoever the scientist created it. Right. So you pick a task, you set a timer for 25 minutes, you do work, and then you take a 5-minute break. After 3 or 4 of the Pomodoros, you do those 4 times in a row, you take a longer break, 15 or 20 minutes. So now when I'm doing work on my podcast, it's totally helped me get farther faster because I would get super, I would spin out in my head and get super pissed and super frustrated. I set a timer, 25 minutes, Right, done, take a break, walk around, go again. All right, anyway. So second, it's helping me be less fat and less stressed out. So this sounds totally lame, I know, but I started using positive reinforcement to start eating healthy and exercising.
Oh, yes? Like what?
Are
you Pavlov's dog?
So kind of. So for running, it's all about the shoes. So I buy new shoes more frequently if I've met all of my short-term goals. So if I do my running, so for 3 months, if I meet the miles that I want to run, I'll buy myself new shoes. And I love new running shoes because they're super comfortable. And if I don't meet my goals, I have to wait because you can, you don't need to buy, you can
new use, shoes, yeah,
you
know, yeah.
You don't have to if you don't want to. Right.
You haven't worn them out yet.
No. And so for food, this one's maybe not awesome, but it's all about alcohol. So I'll buy more expensive whiskey the more I lose or maintain weight versus just like normal whiskey at the grocery store.
And just note, it's probably not the best one for everybody, especially if they're trying to stop drinking.
No, sort of. So if,
yeah, but I get it.
If
you're
that's
kinda
their issue, right, right. But I don't have that issue.
Right. So it's more like an indulgence thing.
Yes.
Like things that you indulge in is going to be a reward your goals.
Yep.
Okay.
That makes sense. I also meditate every morning. I use the Headspace app. I don't know if you use it. I love it.
I don't. I probably should.
Totally helps me chill out and reduce my stress triggers. And I sort of get pumped for the day. I started gratitude journaling. So that was after Gabby died. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Because like I was totally depressed. And I do it every night. And it totally works. It gets me in a good mood before I go to sleep thinking about all the good shit in my life. So even if there's like, even if I had a super shitty day, I'll be like, I don't know. I heard the birds chirp in the morning, or I was able to talk to my kids today. Like I think of whatever the most basic thing is that makes me feel happy. And I'm like, holy crap. Like I'm super blessed. It totally changes my mindset. So anyway,
good for you. I gotta say, I think you're onto something. I mean, you're even nicer to me some days.
I try.
Just kidding. Yeah. But have you seen that all of these things have kind of helped you at work?
So Pomodoro totally helped me at work. Yes. I reprioritize better. I'm setting more boundaries. I get my priorities straight, right? So I don't miss anything that's like super important to me anymore. So I was generally good at it to begin with, but now for sure, I don't mess around. And also with leadership a lot. So kind of a funny story about me. I always thought I was this like servant leader who stood behind my people and always made them look great. But I did some psychoanalysis work and figured out I'm considered what you call a charismatic leader, not a servant leader. And a charismatic leader is just someone who persuades others by telling a great story. So
that tracks.
Right. So here's the thing.
Kind of like you're doing right now.
So I don't super love it, but at least I'm not pretending to be something I'm not.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
everything's
got a positive and negative. So when I use my
storytelling skills
wrong, I'm a manipulating asshole. Hmm. But when I use it right, it totally works. But my point of all this is I'm no longer something I'm not. I was pretending to be a servant leader, right? And I've embraced the concept of not like I am who I am, like I can't change, but I recognize my strengths and I need to use them more appropriately.
Right, being cognizant of it,
yes,
right? But isn't that part of, I think, the biggest thing of psychology is that when we're cognizant of who we are, why we do what we do, how we do what we do, and if we want to change, like how to work on that changing, it helps us become a better person.
That's exactly the point. So that is how it helps. Yes. So you're answering your own question.
I am. But it was from your story. Your story led me there.
Yeah.
Good job.
No, I'd say just in general, help me be a better person, right? I'm doing better at reframing negative self-talk. I totally give myself more grace than I used to. I'm generally a more positive person and focus more on being intentional. And I try really hard to display more gratitude and do more nice things for people. I'm trying to listen more, interrupt less.
Except on the podcast.
You just interrupted me. And I'm trying to be all around better. So I feel like I'm getting into a little bit of a flow state here and things are clicking. You know, I'm only a year out of dead wife, but I think I'm onto something.
I think I need to start taking notes from you. No matter what stage of life you're in, I think everyone could benefit from a little Psych 101. And get the basic tenets under their belt and start practicing some self-awareness.
Amen. Preach it.
It's like continuing, right?
It is. You have to continue.
Right. I think I'm going to add psychology to the homeschool curriculum for next year.
Oh, let's go.
The girls won't know what to hit them. They'll just be healthy little psychologists.
Look at you. Good idea. I like
self-aware
this.
Self-aware and
okay.
Ready to go,
let's go
to the playground.
All right. Fine. Well, your girls are awesome. They already have more self-awareness than most adults. Who are we kidding? They're good. They're good.
I hope so. Again, we'll see. Long term. We'll see. See in the long run. But I'm kind of afraid to ask, are there fun facts in psychology? Because it seems like it's a little stiff and not, you know, don't
Dude,
go there.
Fun facts seem to come faster and faster in all of these episodes. What is happening?
It's, again, the best part of the episode.
Okay. I got a few.
Okay. Lay it on me.
And even if I didn't, I'd make some shit up because I know, totally know. Like, you love this.
I get
and it's
so
the best,
excited.
Right. It's the best part of the show.
It's what I use in real life.
All right. So, ready? First one. Dopamine makes you an info addict.
I'm sorry, what? Dopamine.
An info addict. Yes. So you ever just scroll through TikTok or Instagram like aimlessly? Yeah, there's a reason. Yeah. It's a reward loop. So when you're on your phone, you're stimulating dopamine, your pleasure chemical, the same one that gets released for sex, drugs, rock and roll, baby, you know, dopamine. But what people probably don't know is that dopamine also makes you become more curious and seek out new information. So you should listen to my podcast and get a lot of dopamine. So when you're scrolling, your dopamine loop gets all rizzed up and makes you want to keep scrolling and looking for more info. And the scary thing is, you'll never be satisfied with the amount of information. You'll just keep scrolling until something or someone interrupts you.
I mean, we're all just being controlled by Apple. And the social dilemma on Netflix. Holy shit. This
yes.
is nuts. It's
yes.
all coming together.
Right. It is. That's a perfect example of being controlled. Yes.
All right. If you haven't seen The Social Dilemma, you should totally watch it.
You should. Shout out to Social Dilemma. All right. Number two, being in love is biochemically the same as having severe obsessive compulsive disorder.
Having OCD?
Yep.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
How
listen,
so?
Listen. So you know how they say when you're in love, you get a little bit crazy?
Uh-huh.
Well, neuroscientists have now linked the serotonin transporter 5-HT, sexual behavior, as well as obsessive compulsive disorder. The study was done with 20 couples who had fallen in love in the last 6 months together with a bunch of unmedicated OCD patients. And it was found that both groups had significantly lower density of the 5-HT transporter.
Stop it. Okay, you're nerding out on me. Like, what does that actually mean?
It means your brain treats love and obsession the exact same way. So when you're in love, you're officially crazy.
Okay, I hear you. Still not making the connection. So there was 20 couples who had fallen in love.
Yep.
And then there was
a bunch of unmedicated OCD patients.
And you're telling me that when I am in love, I have a lower density of this 5-HT.
Of this 5-HT transporter.
It's as if I was an unmedicated OCD patient.
Absolutely. Oh. Yes, exactly
the
same.
So what happens when, I guess I should be medicating. So what happens when you have OCD?
And you're in love?
And you're in love.
No, I don't even know what happens. You melt.
I guess.
Yes, it's terrible. All right, number three. I can convince you that you committed a crime that never took place. Just give me a few hours.
I'm going to love this one.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. So a 2015 study involving 91 participants were assigned to either the criminal condition or the non-criminal condition. The criminal condition participants were told that their parents or caregivers had told the researchers that they committed a crime. So like their mom or dad like said that the kid committed a crime, but the kids in the study. Within 3 hours, Amanda, the so-called suspects were questioned in ways that led them to believe and confess to a crime they didn't commit. Some were even able to describe the crime in vivid detail.
Okay, well, I kind of call bullshit.
No, Google it.
It freaks me out. I don't want to believe you.
It's called false memory. Look this up.
But there is actually a case right now of a guy, the cops arrested him because he called in and said his dad had disappeared. And then the cops interrogated him for umpteen amount of hours. And he finally confessed to killing his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad was alive the whole time.
Yeah, he didn't even do it.
No.
There you go. Perfect example. Thank you very much. It happens. Look it up. GTS. Google that shit. Okay, crazy. All right. Number four. Being alone for long periods of time is as bad as smoking.
I mean, isn't that why they also do like, it would make sense that that's why they have, what is that? Confinement in prison. What's that called?
Oh, solitary confinement.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's why they do it, probably. Yeah. So did you know that lonely people are 50% more likely to die prematurely than people with healthy relationships? Loneliness is known to increase inflammation in the body, which, like smoking, contributes to heart disease and other chronic health conditions. Being lonely also results in stress and fucks with your mental health as well. All right, okay, and finally, I got 5 fun syndromes or effects about psychology that are pretty wild. All right. So next, you got the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is a cognitive bias where people with low ability at a task overestimate their ability, and conversely, people with a highly skilled ability underestimate their ability.
I mean, I kind of think that explains why idiots sometimes take office.
Oh!
But it, I, wow. I know, I think it explains it pretty good.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next, we have this thing called phantom vibration syndrome. This one totally happens to me all the time. It's the feeling that your cell phone is vibrating when it really isn't. It happens because the brain misinterprets sensory information due to our habitual overuse of cell phones.
So you just can feel it?
Literally, I've been sitting here with you, like, recording this podcast episode, and I think it's, like, vibrated, like, 12 times because I'm overstimulated. Yes.
Weird.
No, I live my life like this. It's crazy. I'm always touching it. It's stupid. Yes. Okay, that was two. Three, the next is the bystander effect. You may have heard of this one before. The bystander effect is basically the idea that in an emergency situation, no one jumps in to help when there are a bunch of people around. It all has to do with what you call the diffusion of responsibility. Research shows that the more people are around, the less likely anyone will help.
Okay. I believe in this effect. And the reason why is we were going to a Ducks game.
Okay.
And this guy was coming across, Jay, walking across the street, trip and fell.
Yeah.
Smacked his head on the pavement, bleeding.
Yeah.
Glasses broken. And people kept on walking by. Like, one person had stopped and was like, help, help, is anyone a doctor? And, like, swarms of people just continue walking. Like, they stop, kind of stare, and just keep walking, right?
Yeah, people suck.
And we luckily were with a firefighter, and he's a paramedic, and so he stopped and he helped him, and we called 911 and all that stuff. But it was amazing to me how many people...
Yeah, assume someone else would help.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so I also think it has a lot to do with, like, litigious society and, like, cell phones and people recording and everything that's going on. So I think there's a little bit of, like, people are nervous now and they don't want to as much, but I still think it sucks. I would jump in all the time. I mean, you'd have to wait till the situation happens, of course, but I think my instinct says I would jump in all the time.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay, next one is called synesthesia. It's a condition where...
Not anesthesia?
No, synesthesia. Okay. A condition where stimulation of one sensory pathway leads to automatic involuntary experience in a second sensory pathway. Like the people who can see sounds as colors or maybe taste words. It's estimated that 4% of the population has some form of synesthesia, which I think is super cool, right?
That's so interesting.
Okay. And finally, there is emotional contagion. The idea that one person's emotions and behaviors directly trigger similar emotions and behaviors in other people.
Hmm. So this could explain why I feel happier when I'm around cheerful people or when I feel down when I'm around you.
Wow. Ouch. I think it's more like when I yawn, you yawn. Or like when I start crying, you start going. What? Wow.
Okay. That kind of makes more sense.
That was harsh. Okay. I'll take it.
I was trying to be applicable. Sorry. Sorry.
That should have been our word of the day. Applicable.
There you go. Yeah. But in all seriousness, You're awesome. And thanks for always doing all the research and helping me be more sophisticated each week.
You're welcome.
I mean, even though we have probably no listeners, I am super grateful because I feel like I learn a little bit more each week and it's totally helping. So good on you.
I feel the same way. Yeah. And even if we don't have any listeners, I like doing this with you.
Yep.
So there.
Ditto. But could you do me just a little favor?
What?
I can only remember a few things from this episode. So tell me what I got to know, please. Because, you know, I have limited space in my mom brain.
Mom brain.
And also,
what?
Can you concatenate this?
Oh, you did that. Oh, you did it.
I did.
We're going to concatenate.
Yeah. When you said that should have been our word of the day, I realized we didn't actually do the word of the day.
We are going to sort of bring it all together, people. We're going to sum it up. We're going to concatenate. Perfect.
Let's go.
So here's what you got to do, people. Listen up. First, watch Inside Out 2. Number two, just read a friggin' self-help book once a year, people. It's worth it. Just trust me. Pick up any one. They're good for you. Third, if you're feeling bold, maybe study one of the OG psychologists we introduced you to this episode. You won't be disappointed. My pick, even though he wasn't introduced in this episode, Carl Jung. Total personal fave. Look him up. Fourth, when you're at your next business function, pay close attention to what people are chatting about and listen for the emotion behind the discussion. This one's going to be a little harder. Fifth, if you can figure out what's going on under the surface, ask them some open-ended questions. Like, why do you think that happened? Or what specifically bothers you about that? Or what do you want to see changed? So the idea is to really start to engage people. This one's a little bit of heavy lift. And then sixth, with no judgment, listen and learn to super appreciate what they're feeling. Then finally, share these interesting and relevant details to seem sort of sophisticated. Plato, one of the OG philosophers, established the first institute of higher education in the Western world. Founded in 385 BC, Plato's Academy offered students a tuition-free education and was wholly funded by charity. At his academy, students learned not only about the subject of philosophy, but also about political science, math, biology, and astronomy. Number two, Wilhelm Wundt was the first person to actually label himself as a psychologist in 1879. Up until that point, the word didn't exist. Shout out to Wilhelm. You gotta love the Germans. Number three, psychology took an enormous amount of time to emerge as a scientific discipline because it needed time to consolidate. Understanding behavior and thoughts and feelings aren't easy, which explains why it's largely ignored between ancient Greek times all the way up to the 16th century before it really started to take shape. Number four, psychology is the key to unlocking better relationships with both yourself and others. So like it or not, start with a gratitude journal and examining what's going on in your head. And finally, if you seriously can't remember anything from this podcast, remember this. On average, you spend 30% of your waking time just daydreaming. The most common lie is, oh, I'm fine. And when you cry from happiness, the first tear always comes from your right eye. But when you cry from sadness, the first tear comes from your left eye.
And there you have it, folks. The wild and wacky world of psychology, where your brain is the ringleader and your thoughts are the circus. You've delved into the mysteries of the mind, untangled the neurons, and even found out why you can't stop thinking about that awkward thing you did in high school.
Oh, yeah.
We'd like to think we've shared just enough information to make you either a flaming nuisance or a bit more sophisticated to your fellow humans. Well, sort of. Remember, whether you're pondering Freud's obsession with cigars or wondering why Pavlov didn't just use a microwave timer, psychology is always here to remind you that you're not alone in your quirkiness. So next time your brain decides to go on a joyride through the land of overthinking, just sit back, relax, and think, what would Freud say? Thanks for tuning in. Keep those neurons firing, and we'll catch you on the next episode, where we'll probably overanalyze something else. If you enjoyed this episode and found it particularly enthralling, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your peeps. Until next time, stay curious and stay quirky.